It's Wednesday, October 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the United States criticizes Russia's role in Syria.
If they are serious about taking the fight to ISIL, we can see a role for them to play constructively.
We hear from an observer who says it's already time for Russia to consider an exit strategy. Also ahead, a persistent haze hangs over parts of Asia. Part of the southern United States is underwater. A cinematic portrayal of a former top news anchor. It's all coming up on today's International Edition.
We said many times that we would welcome a constructive role for Russia if it takes the fight to ISIL. Thus far, we've not seen that's the case. We've seen no indication that they're actually hitting ISIL targets. It says it wants to take the fight to ISIL. We've not seen that thus far. Frankly, what we've seen.
U.S. spokesman Mark Toner in Washington from the State Department. Reckless and dangerous and provocative. Those are the words that the U.S. State Department spokesman used Monday to describe Russian incursions into Turkish airspace in the pursuit of terrorist targets in Syria. Toner also said such incursions, denounced by Turkey and NATO, demonstrate the importance of consultation and restraint in the shaping of the international response to the presence of the Islamic State, also known as ISIL, in Syria. The attacks on both IS positions and what is called terrorist groups is what Russia is claiming, rebel factions that oppose the Syrian government. Russia analyst Leslie Templeman-Holmes of the University of Melbourne in Australia tells VOA's Victor Beatty that such incursions were inevitable and that Moscow's unfolding strategy in Syria is highly unpredictable.
One thing I've learned from studying Russia for 40 years or so is that you simply cannot predict their leaders. Putin is very unpredictable. He knows that the Turks and NATO behind Turkey is extremely upset about these two incursions, claiming that these were a mistake or that it was only for a few seconds. But we've got high-level technology. The Russians have extremely sophisticated technology. Those kinds of excuses just don't cut it.
There is a coalition of some 40 Syrian insurgent groups, including some of the most powerful fighting against Bashar al-Assad and armed by Arab states, who've called on regional states to forge an alliance against Russia and Assad's other big foreign backer, Iran. That obviously raises the ante for Moscow.
It does. Not only for Moscow, it raises the ante for all of us, because this whole situation is getting messier and messier. The Russians tend to like to support what they see as legitimate governments, and they see Assad as more legitimate than the 40 groups you refer to. The trouble is that the whole situation is so messy. One of the reasons the West has been a little cautious in where it stands on the whole Syrian issue is because whereas some of the anti-Assad forces are moderate and would get wholehearted support from the West, others are definitely more in the terrorist area. They're definitely terrorist organizations, apart from IS itself. And this makes the whole thing complicated. When you say 40 groups, they range across a whole, that's a whole range from moderates to radical extremists. And by getting more of the Arab states involved, this is, as you say, the phrase used, upping the ante, but not merely for Russia. It really is getting totally out of control.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, who's speaking in Spain Monday, said Moscow is pursuing a losing strategy in Syria. His quote, "Russia has escalated the civil war, putting further at risk the very political resolution and preservation of Syria's structure of future governance it says that it wants. It remains my hope," he said, "that Vladimir Putin will see that tethering Russia to a sinking ship is a losing strategy."
When I last spoke to you, Victor, I talked about transition as one of the possible ways out of this apparent deadlock. I still think that that's a possibility, that the transition concept, that as long as it's made clear that Assad is on his way out, but not necessarily tomorrow, that this would be a negotiating position, both for Russia and for the West, and indeed for Turkey and the Middle Eastern states all involved in this. But there's no question that, in my opinion, if Putin really is determined to keep Assad in power long term, then there is absolutely no doubt that he is on a losing streak.
Holmes says the Russian presence in Syria is fraught with risk, and it is time for Russian officials to sit down with their Western counterparts and consider an exit strategy. We were curious to see what was happening online and social media. One Russian state news agency has been tweeting prolifically about the Russian air campaign over Syria. We welcome back Michael Lippin to Studio 22 for more on that. Michael, which agency are we talking about?
Hey, Jim, it's good to be here. Well, we're talking about the Sputnik news agency, whose English Twitter handle is @SputnikINT. It's got 86,000 followers, and it tweeted this note a few hours ago. U.S. refuses to coordinate coalition activities in Syria with Russian forces. Now, it also linked to a Sputnik article quoting the Russian Defense Ministry as saying on Tuesday that it asked representatives of the U.S.-led anti-Islamic State coalition to share intelligence on IS militant positions in Syria with Moscow. In the piece, a Russian official says that if defense ministries of anti-ISIL coalition countries have additional intelligence on terrorists, we ask them to share it with us, and we'll certainly take it into account while planning Russian combat missions in Syria. Now, nowhere in the article is any U.S. official actually quoted as saying that Washington has refused to coordinate with Russia, but the Russian attitude appears to be, you know, share intelligence with us if you like, and we'll consider it, but, you know, we're really going to bomb our targets in Syria regardless of what you do. Now, that Sputnik tweet also has an embedded cartoon that I'd like to describe for you. Mm-hmm. Now, in this cartoon is a scene from a U.S. war room. There is a U.S. military person holding a map showing ISIL locations on a map of Syria. And he's talking to another military guy sitting at a desk looking at a computer screen. Mm-hmm. But the guy has sort of a mask over his eyes shaped like the Pentagon. And he's saying, go away, man. Can't you see I'm busy with my Call of Duty? Now, that's a reference to a war game, to an actual computer game. Right, right. So it looks like he's just sort of firing away at a computer game and not really hitting any location in particular.
Well, a little comedic jab there. What are some of the hashtags that people are using to tweet about the Russian campaign?
Well, I've seen two hashtags start to get some traction in recent days. The Topsy Analytics website shows that hashtag Russia versus ISIL has been used more than 1,000 times in the last 24 hours, while hashtag Russian airstrikes has had about 400 mentions in the same period. One Twitter user who likes Russia vs. ISIL is Paul Delaney 2012 from Belfast, Northern Ireland. He tweeted this. The Americans and British said recently that it could take 20 years to defeat ISIS, yet it looks like hashtag Russia versus ISIL is on course to do that in 20 days. Mm. Now, I'm not sure if Russia can get the job done that quickly, but that's the message that Russia's supporters certainly want to promote. Jim?
Well, quite interesting analysis, and we'll see if that 20 days comes to pass. You can follow Michael on Twitter as well, @Michael_Lippin. Of course, we are International Edition @VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, @PerryCal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is VOA's International Edition. Officials in Thailand are warning smoke pollution from Indonesia's massive forest fires is affecting public health in four southern provinces. VOA correspondent Steve Herman is reporting from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok about the widening problem in the region.
Indonesian farmers and developers routinely burn rainforest to clear land at this time of year. But a large rise in palm oil production on peatlands is blamed for massive fires with thick black smoke that easily drifts across borders. That has led to poor air quality and cancellations of classes, sporting events, and other public activities in five countries. University of Malaya Asia Europe Institute Deputy Executive Director Helena Varki says Indonesian, Malaysian, and Singaporean investors and companies have close links with politicians and officials in Indonesia who are supposed to be mitigating the problem, creating a conflict of interest.
Once they retire from the government, they are re-employed in these companies as advisors and as other positions to maintain this relationship with the present government.
The Association of Southeast Asian Nations has an agreement on transboundary haze pollution, but it has no dispute settlement, enforcement, or punishment mechanisms. Environmental organizations such as the Worldwide Fund for Nature are advocating sustainable lending practices for commercial logging, palm oil, and pulp production, something Singapore's powerful banks are examining. Attempts to extinguish the estimated 1,800 hotspots in Indonesia are being hampered by a lack of equipment and water. Indonesian officials, such as the country's disaster management agency chief, express frustration amid accusations they are not adequately trying to tackle the problem. As the fires continue to burn, money is going up in smoke. Commercial losses in the region are expected to surpass the $9 billion from the rainforest fires in 1997 and 98. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
U.S. financial markets have slowed after days of moving up. Joining us with the latest from the VOA Bureau in New York is Alexis Christophorus.
Wall Street's recent rally lost some steam. A widening U.S. trade deficit and a cut in the International Monetary Fund's global economic outlook undercut some positive momentum. The IMF said it was more pessimistic about prospects for world growth as declining commodity prices and increasing market volatility take their toll, especially on emerging market economies. The U.S. trade deficit jumped almost 16% in August to $48.3 billion, largely because of a strong dollar that reduced exports to their lowest level in 3 years. Economists say that widening deficit could shave off one-half to three-fourths of a percentage point from third-quarter gross domestic product because businesses won't be adding to their inventories. Oil rose above $48 a barrel for a third day of gains as WTI added 4.5%, and Brent rose 4.2% to $51.30 a barrel. According to the U.S. Energy Department, U.S. crude production dropped 120,000 barrels a day in September from the prior month. Jim?
Twitter is an exceptionally well-used social media platform, but I understand, Alexis, they are looking for more people to join them.
That's right. One day after Twitter announced Jack Dorsey as its CEO, the social network unveiled a new product called Moments, which will show curated tweets around certain news events or subjects. Moments represents Twitter's first real effort to get away from the live stream that's been its hallmark and to make interesting stories easier to find and news events easier to follow, both common user complaints. So when users follow a moment like a football game or a presidential primary debate, tweets about it will appear in their timelines. Of course, Twitter's picking and choosing of tweets gives it a significant amount of editorial power. A curation team will follow editorial guidelines to pick out the most compelling content. In the past month, Twitter has pushed heavily towards making its product more user-friendly, and investors are waiting to see if this will attract new users. Jim?
Alexis Christophorus from New York. Alexis, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
It unfortunately happens often in many parts of the world, now in South Carolina. The level of flooding there is the worst in the southern U.S. state's recorded history. High and dangerous water has forced residents from their homes and left thousands without drinking water and electricity. Parts of the state received about 60 centimeters of rain in just a couple of days. VOA's Slatica Hoke tells us it will take days for that water to recede.
Much of South Carolina was underwater Monday after several days of torrential rain. The water rushed so fast into homes over the weekend that some people barely escaped and many had to be airlifted out.
Probably the most terrifying moment of my life, especially having her and holding on to your 15-month-old daughter. Just that far up was incredibly frightening.
I was scared we couldn't get the car out, so I started on foot. I thought we were going to die.
I was just throwing stuff on beds to try to, like, save stuff.
This man used his own boat to help rescue those who were stranded.
Was stomping on the roof and listening to see if anybody thumped back. We found a note that said, "We are in the attic."
Governor Nikki Haley said South Carolina is enduring its worst rains in 1,000 years.
We have currently have 40,000 people right now without water. And I know that they're working very hard to get that back up. We have 26,000 people that are without power.
Authorities have warned residents to remain careful even after the rain stops, as waterlogged roads and undermined structures may collapse at any time. A specialized rescue team from Fairfax, Virginia, is in the flooded region for assistance.
We understand that due to the flooding, there can be that potential for structures to fail. So we're prepared with that, with tools and equipment to deal with any kind of collapse.
A team of 80 rescue workers supplied with speedboats, search dogs, equipment and tools has been activated by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Slatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You can visit our website at voanews.com to see some of the dramatic scenes from this unprecedented flooding. Well, it's a story that viewers here in the United States might have seen on network television, presented by newsman Dan Rather. Now Oscar winners Robert Redford and Cate Blanchett are exploring the controversial events that surrounded the downfall of the former CBS News anchor in a new film from Sony Pictures Classics entitled Truth. International Edition's David Byrd has this look at the film, which also stars Dennis Quaid and Stacey Keach.
The year is 2004, and George W. Bush is running for re-election. Then CBS News anchor Dan Rather and producer Mary Mapes broadcast what became a highly controversial report that said the former president had used his father's political influence to escape service in Vietnam. The movie is based on Mapes' autobiographical book, Truth and Duty, The Press, The President, and the Privilege of Power. The controversy over the so-called Killian documents, documents which criticized Mr. Bush's service in the Texas Air National Guard instead of going to Vietnam, is the center of the film. It was learned later that CBS had not authenticated the documents, which were supposedly from Bush's commanding officer, the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian. The network eventually repudiated the documents and its reporting and issued a public apology. Both Mapes and Rather lost their jobs, along with several executives at the network. At the Los Angeles premiere of the film, Cate Blanchett, who plays Mary Mapes in the movie, said that Truth presents the facts without spin or revision.
And I think the film is like a glass of water. It presents the events as they happened and then throws it back to the audience to say, well, how do you feel about corporate media ownership and in its proximity to politics? And I think it transcends cultures. Yes, it's very particularly about American politics and American media ownership, but that those questions are relevant whether you live in Europe or Australasia or the States.
Robert Redford plays Dan Rather in the film. Redford did not attend the L.A. premiere, but Cate Blanchett says that working with him was something she had wanted to do for a long time.
To work opposite him, I mean, he's so disarmingly frank and present and engaged, and he asks really dangerous questions, I think, both politically, culturally, socially, but as an actor, he puts people at ease, but also keeps them on their toes, and that's a very rare sort of quality to get to the chance to act opposite, so I relished every second.
The film marks the directorial debut for James Vanderbilt, better known for his writing and producing of The Amazing Spider-Man, Zodiac, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Vanderbilt says he revels in the kind of story that gives viewers an insider's take on events.
And I love movies where you can kind of go behind the curtain and sort of see how things are done and how things are made. And so I love the idea of doing that with television news. And this seemed to be the perfect story to do that with because there were so many facets of what happened. And then being able to do it with somebody like Kate and see it through her eyes, see it through Mary Mapes' eyes, was really exciting to me.
Truth also stars Stacy Keach as Lieutenant Colonel Bill Burkett, who turned over the Killian documents to CBS. Elizabeth Moss stars as producer Lucy Scott, and Dennis Quaid plays Colonel Roger Charles, who worked with Mary Mapes when she broke the story of prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Topher Grace plays researcher Mike Smith, and John Benjamin Hickey stars as Mark Rolstad, Mapes' husband. Truth was shown at this year's Toronto Film Festival and makes its U.S. debut October 16th. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us always at voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. Follow us at @VOA_IE. We'd like to thank two great veterans for putting our show on today, director Tracy Carter and engineer Dan Crafton, and you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government recently featured 20 cases of women being unjustly detained for their beliefs or for their defense of the rights of others in a month-long campaign known as #FreeThe20. Day 18 of the campaign was dedicated to the 80,000 to 120,000 North Koreans, including women and children, who are incarcerated in North Korean political prison camps, facing starvation, forced labor, executions, and torture. In the brutal North Korean prison camp system, women are subjected to rape, sexual violence, and forced abortion. In the past, defectors have described political offenses that could result in imprisonment as including burning old currency or criticizing the government's currency revaluation, sitting on newspapers bearing Kim Il-sung's or Kim Jong-il's picture, mentioning Kim Il-sung's limited formal education, or defacing photographs of the Kims.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
North Korea, the U.S. government particularly featured 20 cases of women being unjustly detained for their beliefs or for their defense of the rights of other prisoners in a month-long campaign known as #FreeThe20. From the dung of cattle. Day 18 of the campaign, she said, "If there was a day that we were able to have 20,000 North Koreans, that was a special diet for us, including women and children. We had to eat everything alive. We were incarcerated in North Korean political prison camps. Everything that flew." Facing starvation, on the ground, forced labor, any grass executions, that grew in the and field. Torture. In at the close of the #FreeThe20 campaign, women U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, sexual violence, the power, and said, abortion. We have been in the saying past, to the defectors have described political and others like them that could result in imprisonment. If you want to empower women, including don't imprison them currency, on the basis of their or views criticizing or beliefs, the government's currency and to revaluation, the women and their families, sitting on newspapers, we have not forgotten you. Or we will continue to fight for your release, mentioning Kim Il-sung's limited formal education, or defacing photographs.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, chilling. VOA, Kim Washington, D.C., 20237 USA.
She and you
may also comment
so
and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage.
She said, if there was a day that we were able to have mouse, that was a special diet for us.
Editorials.
We had to eat everything alive, every type of meat we could find, everything that flew, that crawled on the ground, any grass that grew in the field. At the close of the #FreeThe20 campaign, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, said, we have been saying to the governments holding these prisoners and others like them, if you want to empower women, don't imprison them on the basis of their views or beliefs. And to the women and their families, we have been saying, We have not forgotten you. We will continue to fight for your release and that of others like you.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237 U.S.